Welcome back to One of Us is Talking. I am so excited for today's episode. Erica Sala, One of Us is Lying's showrunner, is joining me. We're going to talk all about the show and maybe even some storylines that are going to happen but never quite made it to the screen. Without further ado, here's Erica. Hello, welcome back to another episode of One of Us is Talking. I am here today with Erica Sala, our amazing showrunner. How are you today, Erica?
I am great. I'm great. Thank you for having me. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much. And thank you so much for joining. I'm really excited about this episode because I know we have a lot of questions about the behind the scenes work and everything that goes on with the show. So this is really exciting. And I mean, for season two, you made that transition from executive producer to showrunner. What was that like?
It was great. It was exciting. It was obviously a little bit scary. I know season one was so beloved and season two kind of stepping into that role plus moving away from the book. So I was like, oh God, what if everyone hates it? But, it was great. You know, in season one, Dario was such a great leader and such a like generous, showrunner. And was always really, really respectful of the fact that like I had created the show and like really took me along for the ride through every step. So I felt really prepared going into season two. Like he had really trained me and gotten me ready for that role. And that was great.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's so cool. And I mean, seeing how you made that transition so seamlessly, I think season two, it was amazing. It kept, and I think I talked to Marianne Lee about this too. You all kept the characters so perfect. Like you wouldn't, like some shows come back and the characters are different. Everything picked right off and everyone was the same and it still had that feel to it. So that was really amazing. And I know some shows when the showrunner changes, you sometimes can feel it, but with One of Us is Lying, I felt like it just so seamless, picked right up. It was amazing. So, and it's really cool to see how you were able to take that on. And I mean, like you mentioned, season two, we strayed away from the book. So that was definitely, I mean, even as fans, no one knew what to expect.
Yeah. It was terrifying.
And we're like, oh my gosh, are there like, who are the new characters going to be? How much is going to stray from the books? So when you kind of came back from season one and ended season one and went into season two, did you always know that you wanted it to stray from the books and you wanted to bring in Simon Says?
Yeah, always knew that we would stray from the books. I mean, from the really even from like pitching the show, both books are amazing, but the first book just felt like such a great kind of, container for one season of television. It was like this like paces out so well. It solves a really great mystery. And I loved the second book, but it just felt like we love these characters so much and I don't want to start over with new characters. And so it was really important to me to like stay true to the characters that are in the first book and like that be the guiding principle that it's like those characters that the fans love so much. That's what we continue from the book in the second season, but always knew we were going to go off with a new mystery and that like part of the job of season one was adding things in that weren't in the books that were, you know, going to open up new mysteries, open up new questions, new character problems that were going to launch us into a season two.
Yeah, definitely. I think only with 8 episodes, it would have been hard to like take the characters that everyone loves away and start new. It was when TV used to be 22 to 24 episodes, I feel like you can accomplish so much more, but to lose Bronwyn and Nate and Addie and Cooper, and then even the rest of them after 8 episodes, it wouldn't have been, I don't think, as successful.
Agreed.
It was great to see a continuation of them. And I mean, talking about the differences, I heard that Stan was almost a dog and not a bearded dragon.
In my mind, he was almost a dog. I think in our other producers' minds, he was never going to be a dog. And I admit I was wrong. You know, I think I just had like a picturing shooting the show and like having a bearded dragon. I just had this like totally wrong-headed, like icky. Like, I just thought that would be icky. And I was like, dogs are so great. And people like love a boy and his dog. But Karen McManus was like, I get fan mail. She was like, Stan is maybe like the number two character that I get fan mail from. Like, you cannot do this, or four. And I was like, okay, note taken. Change it back to the lizard. And then as soon as we got on set in the pilot and had that bearded lizard, and I saw like Cooper like talking to the little bearded dragon, I was like, oh, obviously this is so great. It's so cute. I now love bearded dragon. She's fully on board.
I kind of agree. When you think of it in theory, it's like, oh my gosh, how are you going to film with the bearded dragon? And like, dogs have so much more personality, but the bearded dragon really was able to work. And I can even say from the fan side, everyone loves Stan. So,
oh my God. Yeah.
It is
me great. Too. Me too.
And yeah, so all the storylines that we saw in season one and season two, all of them, they wrapped up so nicely and they fit in, and we're still left with the cliffhanger. But do you have any initial story ideas for either season that didn't get used and maybe won't ever get used that you could talk about?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think in both seasons, you want to do, there was so much that we wanted to do, you know, and like at the beginning of the writer's room, both seasons, like the first 2 weeks are kind of like this blue sky weeks where you're just like throwing every idea at the wall. And like, you know, I think in season one, it's probably a slightly smaller list of like scenes from the book that we really wanted to get in there. Like Bronwyn playing piano for Nate, we were like, we are getting that in. And then it just never, we never found the time. And, you know, and I think I heard your interview with Doralyn, and I was like reminded how we had told her character was going to be so big in season one, and then she wasn't in season one, which I felt terrible about, but I think totally worth the wait. But there was in season one like a whole idea for a storyline with her that just, again, once you realize you only have 8 episodes and you have so many like core characters already, you've just got to shrink it down. But in season two, there were a lot. I think, you know, there was definitely a version of the first episode that we talked about being Thanksgiving, and Ashton was going to show up, and we were going to be like, Addie had a sister the whole time. And then again, it was just sort of like, do we want Addie talking to this other character that we don't know yet, even though we love her from the book? Or do we want Addie like having those conversations with Janae or with Bronwyn and like really dig into those friendships? So it did always come back to like, how do we simplify and make it about these core characters? And I would say the other thing is like, we had a lot of stories we wanted to tell for the adults. Like, we wanted the parents to start getting messier and have romances of their own and, you know, scandals of their own. And again, it's just kind of like, oh, we only have so much room. But dreams for the future.
Yeah, I mean, it's true. Again, these 8 episodes, you don't realize how little space there is. And in terms of FJ and Doralyn, I do agree. I think if she would have been rushed into season one, it would have kind of taken away from her part in season two. And I think she portrayed it so well. And I think you guys wrote it in so well. And it was perfect to hold off because it kind of allowed that new mystery to be open. And even her, well, how she played a part with Bronwyn and Nate, I feel like if that was in season one, that would have been very hard to like kind of established.
Totally. Yeah.
And even with Ashton, I know readers all love Ashton. And I know that's such an important character, but it's true. Being able to see Addie have more of that relationship with Janae and then even Bronwyn is strengthening those friendships is so much more important than introducing a random character who would kind of could cause more confusion. So I can see where that plays out. And I just think the fan reaction this season, I think season one was so loved, but I think season two blew everything that we knew out of the water. Like, it was fantastic. And I'm sure you've been seeing a lot of that on Twitter. So what was your reaction to seeing these like reactions?
I mean, it was awesome. It was so much fun. We had been working on the show for a year when it came out, you know, from the first day of that writer's room to the show coming out, and you sort of imagine and like see different versions of it and kind of like get on the set and see the actors doing their thing. You're like, I'm pretty sure this is going to work. I'm pretty sure this is going to be a good season, but it's really not until it drops that you really know what you're dealing with. And, you know, seeing again, I think the fear of like pushing these characters into new territory that we didn't see in the book was really, really scary. And seeing people like embrace that and be excited about that and, you know, love these characters and love the story so much was huge. It was so, so wonderful and positive. And yeah, it's been great.
Yeah, no, that's so great to hear. And I mean, you guys put so much work into the show, not only the work side, but you go all the way to New Zealand. And I know that's not an easy trip. And living in another country for 4 or 5 months, that must be like very difficult away from your family and friends. So was this always the plan to shoot in New Zealand? Because I know the pilot was in Vancouver, or was this a challenge presented by the pandemic?
It was a combo. The pilot we shot in Vancouver, and I think, you never know, but I think if the pandemic hadn't happened, we would have gone back to Vancouver. You know, I think we'd established locations there that, you know, we were kind of up and running. And then the pandemic pushed production. Stages in Vancouver were like getting like they were really full. And I mean, and New Zealand, as you know, in the first season was still a zero COVID country. And that really allowed us to shoot efficiently. It kept our actors safe. It kept our crew safe. So it was a really like, excite when it was presented as a possibility, that was like a really exciting thing for all of us. And it actually matches, like, surprisingly, because it's so much further away, but it matches Southern California, I think, much better than Vancouver does. So it was really like great to have those coastlines, the beauty of New Zealand, a lot of the architecture matched, so that was excellent.
Yeah. And this is just a question that came up in my head, because I know the end of season one, you guys had to go to Toronto to film because of COVID. How were you able to find shooting locations so quickly that matched up?
The real answer is that we just had an amazing, amazing crew, and we had a director who just, you know, our producing director stepped in and like just made it all happen. We took the crew from Umbrella Academy had like just wrapped up there, and they just stepped in and became our crew. And like that, it was just a huge group effort to make it happen. And like, you know, people at UCP moving mountains. We were lucky that we only had a day and a half of shooting left when we got shut down in New Zealand. So we only had two locations left to shoot. We had the house that had the Halloween party, and then we had the woods. And we had already shot in the house that had the Halloween party, so we did really have to like find another house, find ways to make it what match, like shoot in really sort of creative ways. Again, our director John Scott just like killed it figuring that out. And then, you know, finding woods in Toronto was like, that's easy, that's fine. But then finding woods that matched in New Zealand when we went back and had to like recreate that scene was like, oh, can we pull this off? And, you know, I think we did.
Yeah, no, you can't tell the difference. And I remember when everything shut down, that had been when I had like first became a fan. And I remember a lot of the cast members were rapping that day. So everyone was kind of like, maybe they finished, maybe they didn't. And then, so that's crazy. I mean,
it was truly an insane day. I mean, we were like all so excited. We're shooting this Halloween party. We had like crew members dressed up in Halloween costumes. Everyone was like so excited. Like, we love being in New Zealand, but we had been there for like 5 months, and everyone's like, we're going to go home. We're going to see our families. And I remember I had been at like an ADR session that morning and was driving to set. My assistant came and picked me up from the session, and he was driving me to set, and he was like, okay, I don't want you to freak out, but there is a community case of COVID in New Zealand. And I was like, what does that mean? What's going to happen? And he was like, well, last time it happened, the country just shut down for a few days. They figured out where it came from, and we were up and running. And I was like, okay. And we get to set that night. I think we got like I mean, I think we maybe shot one scene, and then Jacinda, the Prime Minister of New Zealand, came on at like 8 o'clock and was like, the country's shutting down at midnight, go home now. So we like stopped filming in the middle of a scene, everyone went home, and then we waited in lockdown for like a week, 2 weeks before we realized like, it's not gonna happen, and they sent us to Toronto. So yeah, it was wild, but everyone, I mean, our actors were such troopers, and like some of them had to go, weren't vaccinated yet. So had to like, just because of the timing of being in New Zealand, and they had to go into lockdown in Canada before they could shoot. I mean, it was wild, but
I mean,
it's a good story now.
It's a good story. It is good. I mean, yeah. And I remember just reading the news and watching as that was happening, as there was like one case there and it closed, and here in the US we had so many cases and everything was business as usual. So that was crazy to see.
Yeah. And
I mean, you guys, the writers, the crew, you guys are like the backbone of the show. I mean, without you guys we wouldn't have a show. And I think the writer's room, as a writer myself, really interests me, because I can only imagine what that's like. And I know even the pandemic has changed those a bit. But how does a typical writer's room meeting for One of Us is Lying go?
We are, both seasons, we were fully on Zoom, which, you know, is new in the post-COVID. And I think some writer's rooms are definitely starting to go back into in person. But we just didn't, you know, partly because I'm in New York and all the writers are in LA. But last year, it still just didn't feel quite right to go back. So we were on Zoom. And, you know, I think as we all know, Zoom gets exhausting. So the days in the writer's room are definitely shorter than they would be if we were in person. We'll usually meet for like 5 hours, like a really concentrated 5 hours of staring at each other on the screen. And we have like a virtual whiteboard that we all share. And it's a really great writer's room. Just everyone in it is so, loves the show, is so smart, is so fun, and is just like, it's a really all hands on deck group. So like, you know, every episode is truly broken by everyone in the room. Whoever's writing the episode will kind of take the lead, but like, we're all really contributing for everything. And then whoever's writing the episode, once we have it sort of all boarded out and we're like, this is the shape, these are the scenes, they'll take us through it, kind of like stress test it. Everyone kind of asks their last questions. And then that writer goes off and outlines and writes, and, you know, depending on the schedule, might come into the writer's room while they're writing, or might just like go away for a week and do their thing. And, you know, I generally, when I get a script, I certainly know what the story is going to be. Like, I know generally what to expect, but there are always like things that the writers have thrown in that just make me laugh out loud. You know, like, I feel like every episode had something that I was like, oh my God, like in episode 4, Anthony Johnston's episode, the cheerleader is doing the Jake cheer. Like, that's not something we had broken in the room. That's something he just like put in the episode, and I was like, this is amazing. Or, you know, the Janae at the graveyard, that was all broken in the room, but we hadn't decided like what needed, what they were going to spray paint, and the it was supposed to be a dick was like, just Molly threw that in, and I remember reading that and just like bursting out laughing. And so, you know, those moments of like seeing their personality come in is always,
yeah,
so
no, that fun. I was just going to say that it's almost like you can see everyone's personality in the individual episode, but it still comes together to make such a cohesive show.
Yeah.
So that's really cool.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is indicative of the writers and how strongly they can write in their talent. So that's really cool to hear. And I know the graveyard scene and the Jake cheer were like two fan favorites. So it's fun to hear them like added in. And writing these seasons, I imagine, when you kind of finish one, you have to have an idea of where you would want to go. And we're all fingers crossed for season 3. So when you wrote that ending to season 2, did you have an idea of where you would want a season 3 to go, like in mind?
Yeah, I mean, definitely knew kind of a timeline of of where we would want season three to go. So like that graduation teaser, I feel like it's hopefully not too much of a spoiler that we would want to kind of go up to graduation, therefore in season three, that we like really want to get these kids out of high school. And I think there are, you know, going into season two, it was so helpful to have this huge mystery that was dropped at the end of season one to be like, okay, we know where we're starting. And sort of, so the same thing here, that we really want to be like, we know what our target is. We know that something happens at graduation. That's the mystery we're going to tell. I think there's a nice Fiona cliffhanger, like what happened to her in that jail cell. So just kind of planting those mysteries so that, you know, in the, you know, if we are lucky enough to have a season three, we know what questions we need to answer. And then there are definitely things that like came up in season two that we were like, oh, maybe this is also going on that, you know, mm-hmm. isn't explicitly said, that we know we kind of would want to pull to the surface.
Yeah. And I think the way the show ended, of course, no one wants to believe that like Bronwyn's dead, but I think it left for such great theories from fans and kind of just thinking like, what happened to get to that point? And it's so ambiguous because there's no body. And one thing I've always mm-hmm. learned from shows like Pretty Little Liars, if there's no body, you're never going to know what really happened. Really, yes, dead. So definitely. I think that was really interesting to see. And even Fiona, is she dead? Who poisoned her? There's so much up in the air and so many fun theories. So I think that was a great place to end. And that necklace really was just like a punch in the gut, seeing it there.
I know. Yeah, and that scene, I will say, like, we shot that scene twice, because the first time we shot it and we were like, yeah, that's good, you know, that like that will sort of get people talking. And then we kind of all watched it again and we were like, no, we got to go bigger. And like, so we reshot the whole thing and kind of played with our camera moves a little more, and I'm really glad we did.
It was perfect. And I know I sat there shocked. Like, I for a few minutes didn't say anything, because you have this happy moment and Nate's putting the necklace on Bronwyn.
I know.
Later, like, oh my God. So that was a great ending. And everything that goes into this show, all the work on set, what's a typical day on set like?
You know, I feel like this is such a cliche thing to say, but I really don't think there is a typical day. You know, I mean, it really depends on what we're shooting that day. But like, you know, we in New Zealand, the hours are a little shorter than they are on set in America, which is great. We shoot 10-hour days. Every episode gets, like, am I going to say the right thing here? We get 10 days to shoot each episode. So that means, you know, we're usually shooting about 5 pages a day. I would say about half of our days are on the stages. So that's the school, Addie's bedroom, Janae's pool house, some of the interiors of the yacht, Chris's dorm room. So like a lot of the bedrooms and the school are just a beautiful set that our amazing production design team made. And I think if we're on set, days are a little more chill, you know, like everyone's trailer is right there. Everyone knows what to expect. Like, it's all kind of runs like clockwork. When you're out on location, it's anyone's guess, you know, like New Zealand weather in the winter is crazy. It's, I would say a typical day is kind of dodging rain. It's, you know, worrying that if you're going to be able to get this done in 10 hours, because it doesn't, you know, it's raining and then it's sunny and then it's raining and then it's sunny. But I think truly this cast is just like as fun, as bonded, as like incredibly like cool and sweet and talented as they seem on social media. And so I do think a typical day on set is just like kind of great, because you're around this team that's just like so pumped, so happy to be there, so good at what they do.
Yeah, that's awesome. That translates so well on screen between the characters, and even like you said, on social media. And I think that's what's such like a pull into the show. We have this cast who they're just, you can tell they're so close and they're so much fun and they're so nice. So I think that really does translate everywhere. And it's part of what makes the show the show. And I think that's.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, that's where like, I mean, I think that we certainly to some extent knew what we were doing when we were casting, but like, we also just got so lucky, you know. I mean, they are all so supportive of each other, so kind, so like engaged with the material. Like, yeah, it's a dream cast.
Yeah, and it's great to see from the fan side too. And I mean, talking more about you, you wrote the pilot script, you created the show. How did you get into screenwriting and the entertainment business? And do you have any advice for people who are looking to do the same?
Yeah, definitely. I came in through theater. So I went to undergrad. I did a ton of like theater playwriting. And then I went to grad school for playwriting and moved to New York to be a playwright and spent my 20s really like working day jobs, writing plays. And then at some point, just saw like a couple playwrights becoming TV writers. I like love TV so much and was like, I want to give this a shot. And a lot of it is the same skill set, you know, like a lot of it is the same kind of really caring about your characters, writing dialogue, telling stories. So it was honestly just like a fun transition. Like I think I got very lucky, and I also think that playwriting was an amazing training ground because it's such a, you know, theater is so collaborative. And I think the biggest thing is, especially, you know, kind of the way I was doing in New York, I was like making stuff all the time. So I was writing things, making things with my friends, seeing things in front of audiences. And that, I think, like all the school in the world, was great. Seeing an audience react or not react to the things you write is like the hugest lesson in the world, you know? And I think that was a huge gift and really important. And so I think advice wise, in whatever way it is for you, like whatever your way in is, and I think there are a million different ways to approach screenwriting and TV writing, but like, everyone's going to tell you, like, you just have to write, you just have to write, you just have to write, which is totally true. But I think you also have to make stuff, and you also have to share stuff, and you have to, like, listen to people and collaborate and hear stories and hear people's reactions to your stories and, like, really take that in, you know, and, like, really see what's resonating. And, you know, because we do this because we want to communicate. And so, like, listening to your audience and, like, listening to your friends and hearing, like, paying attention to how people are, like, hearing the stories you're telling, and is the emotion you're trying to convey, is the story you're trying to convey, like, are people hearing that? Are people feeling that? Is really huge. And I think like learning to get that on the page is the biggest thing you can do.
Yeah, definitely. Cause I think you can learn so much in school and through courses, but you don't really know what's working for others until you see that reaction. So I think that's great advice. Yeah. Sometimes it is scary to make that jump. Like to kind
But if you do it with your friends, right? Like if you build a community, if you find people you trust, and you're just like remembering that this is like so, it's such a silly fun thing we get to do, right? Like telling stories should be fun. And like, I don't know. Yeah.
No, that's great advice. Thank you so much. And I mean, one of us is lying, like you're the brains behind it. Is there any character that you relate to most or feel a connection to or really spoke to you when creating this show?
God, I love them all. I really do love them all. But I think from the jump, it's like the characters that I felt like I think it might have been a little different in season one and season two. I think in season one, I was really excited to write Addie's character because I do think that like the character that maybe it would have been helpful for me to see in high school is someone who like is presenting as like really together and like really, you know, popular and happy and is so much more complex and has anxiety and has like real turmoil going on, and like watching her embrace that and become braver and kind of like, I called it like sort of the reverse ugly duckling story of being like, fuck pretending to be that girl. And like, let me be honest about who I am. And like, let me embrace like, yeah, my weirdness and my intelligence and my humor, and not try to like play dress up for some boy, was really exciting for me in season one. And I think in season two, I think the Chris and Cooper's romance and also Janae's story, like all the queer stories, just felt really important to me to just, and I'm really, really proud of how we did it, because I think we told really honest stories in kind of casual ways, you know, and like just sort of like, these are beautiful, wonderful people in the world, and they have stories that are not only about their identity, you know, and knowing or hoping that, you know, teenagers and young people are like seeing those characters and hopefully feeling seen and recognizing themselves in those characters was big for me.
Yeah, it felt so authentic. And I can say, even as someone who I grew up watching these teen dramas, One of Us is Lying is doing it very well. And I think it's such a great kind of watch for people who are in high school now. And I think, although they're dealing with maybe the murder, which isn't your typical high school experience, that aside, these are like three-dimensional characters who have these real life problems. And I think that's so fresh to see on television now. And I think they're done so well. So that's great to hear.
Thank you.
And I just want to thank you so much for taking the time today. I'm so excited for this episode. You had such fun information. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. And thank you for this podcast. I mean, and thank you for watching the show. It's just, yeah, it's been so fun talking to you. And
no problem.
I'm excited about it.
Thank you so much again, and have a nice day.
Cool. Thanks. You too.
Thank you, Erica, for being such a great guest. And thanks to all of you for tuning in this week. I really hope you enjoyed this episode. Next week, I will be joined by Kareem, who is also known as Chris Green, on the show. Make sure to follow One of Us is Talking on Instagram for exclusive clips, and I will see you all next week.